breaking ball and a call. Strike three. Third strikeout for Zach.
He's going to just watch it go. A grand slam for Bryson Stott.
And there's a high fly ball. Deep right field. Harper watches it fly.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, the Phillies saved our sanity on Sunday Night Baseball last night. I shudder to think how dark the podcast would have been here as we get ready for the roundtable edition of the show. But the Phillies do take 2 out of 3, snapping a 5-game losing streak this weekend in Chicago against a previously very hot Cubs team. We're going to talk about more the wins on Saturday and Sunday than the loss on Friday. What can you say about a 4-0 loss? But we're going to talk about this weekend, everything we saw in Chicago at Wrigley Field, and we'll get to a little bit of nonsense at the end of the show. I got a new little segment I want to do at the end of our roundtable podcast where we bring a little nonsense into the festivities. So we'll do that coming up here on this edition of Hittin' Season. Joining me for the roundtable, as always, Liz Rocher and Justin Clue. Liz, of course, from Saber. Follow her on Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. I like saying Saber like that, Liz. How you doing? How's it going?
Oh, peachy keen. I could not be more thrilled that the Phillies won because I did not take that loss on Friday well.
Yeah.
I watched that game with my sister, and it was just revolting.
Yeah, yeah. A 4-0 loss is always revolting, especially when the offense has been playing as poorly as it was, and it's 5 losses in a row. I mean, things are heading in a direction. You got 2 more in Wrigley Field against a really good, really hot Cubs team. Things didn't feel like they were going to go the way they went on Saturday and Sunday. Justin Clue, of course, Baseball Prospectus. How you feeling, pal?
So everybody kind of rolls their eyes at the idea of like players moving on or being displaced from the roster who aren't as good as, you know, the people potentially replacing them. And, you know, I just feel like it needs to be said that some things have happened to this team roster wise this season. First, you have Garrett Stubbs isn't going to be a part of it anymore for, you know, full time. He's down in the minors, and then daycare has that formal announcement that they're not going to be goofing around anymore. And then Brandon Marsh gets hurt and he's not with the team. And now Cody Clemens has gone to the Twins in exchange for either a human being or a pile of money in the shape of a human being.
Just a pile of money.
And, you know, we all kind of, it's nice when the intangibles are there in addition to winning, and everyone gets to say, oh, look at this fun thing that the team does, and they're fun and they're winning. But then the intangible guys go away or whatever, and you know, it just comes down to we want a more business-like approach, and we want to be a very serious team this year, as the Phillies have said. And then, you know, come late May, everybody's looking at each other and just going like, it just feels like something's missing. We can't put our finger on it, but something's different about this team. And it's just not there. It doesn't feel right. Something's just not there. And it's just a little frustrating because it feels like we all enjoy the good time vibe stuff when it's there. And then we act like it's so easily cast aside in the room for potential statistical improvements. Look, all I'm saying is I'm looking at a headline from the last time the Phillies were a World Series team, and a Scott Lauber story that said team dinners, fantasy football, and a karaoke night. How the Phillies created a winning chemistry. And they did that by, you know, embracing the whole we are friends, we're having a good time. And yeah, some of that's brought on by winning, but some of that's just, you know, like to the team chemistry that we were so positive about with this team. And I'm not saying it doesn't have that anymore, but by their own declaration, they have decided to kind of be a different sort of team in spirit this year. And I'm just, I don't get it. I don't get the move. I mean, this was working at one point, like being friends and yeah, you know, like having good aura. I'm trying not to say vibes so hard. Having like a good aura around the team and everything, and just, you know, everybody having a, but no, this year it's like, no, we're going to get really buttoned up. We're going to get really locked up. We're going to get really super repressed, and we're all just going to be really good at baseball. And that's just what's going to happen. And I don't know. I guess this is just my formal declaration that I don't know if that's going to work.
It's not going to work because it No one looks like they're having a super ton of fun. No one is looking like they're enjoying themselves. And that's fine if they were winning, but they're not. Like, they are doing a little bit more winning, like, over the last three games earlier than that. But, like, if it goes back down again, like, it'll get dark quick because there's no fun anywhere.
That's not the Phillies' last rough patch. And, yeah, I feel bad saying this coming off with taking 2 out of 3 from one of the hottest, if not the hottest hitting team in baseball. That's a good thing, and I'm looking forward to talking about it. But this is a thought that just kind of entered my head last week, you know, amidst the losing. This won't be the last 5-game losing streak that the Phillies experienced this year, I don't think. And, you know, you see them when that's happening, and everybody just seems really, like, dour and not like they're having a good time.
Yeah.
And again, that's hard to recapture. That's hard to do, but it's the formality of kind of declaring daycare is over. The water celebrations are over. Like, we are a business-like team now. And I just read that headline from 3 years ago because it just seems like that was something that really worked for this team. I don't really get the change.
Well, go ahead, Liz.
Just because it hasn't won them a World Series yet.
Right.
That's are you going to act like that didn't get them, like that was the reason why they didn't win a World Series? They don't win a World Series because they get no hit in the World Series. And that's not because they were dumping water on each other all year after they won.
I know, but it's just what athletes do.
Right. I think what we've seen is that this Phillies team, especially with the way they played in the second half and the way they played against the Mets, we're trying to think of something different. Right. And it kind of did feel like that crest of the 2022 playoffs, you know, it lasted into 2023. It lasted deep into that series against the Diamondbacks. And as many vibes as were there and as good as everybody felt, as sure as that team looked like it was going to win the World Series, it all kind of fell apart. And then they race off to the hot start in 2024. And then it kind of all falls apart again at the end of 2024. And I think it's maybe a way for these guys to say, let's try something different. Let's try something else. Maybe this is a way we stay more locked in. Maybe this is a way we stay more consistent. Here's the thing though. I don't even know that it's conscious. I don't know that they even have really thought about, like, you know, we're going out of our way to be more business-like and be more serious. I get what you're saying that they did, you know, the daycare guys announced that they weren't going to be doing that stuff anymore. But, you know, that's kind of organic. Like, if they don't feel like doing it anymore, then it's not going to be good if they are still doing it. You know, they are further along in their careers now. There does appear, like you guys were talking about on the last podcast, like this 97.5 reported falling out between Bohm and Marsh. So that might have just kind of paved the way for that ending anyway. It's probably, if that is true, it's probably the reason why they're not doing it. They're not doing it anymore. But those aren't young guys anymore. That's kind of like kids stuff, and they're not kids anymore. And that's what this team doesn't really have right now. Is in 2022 and 23, you had this young infusion of talent. You had these young guys coming in. You had Brandon Marsh barking at people. You know, you had Bryson Stott doing his thing. You had Alec Bohm coming in as a young buck. You know, he at the start of 22, he wasn't even on the team, and so you have this young energy that I don't know is there anymore. Right? This is a bunch of veteran guys who I think feel like and understand this is this group's last chance to do this. And I think they are reacting that way. And I don't think taking Garrett Stubbs out of the equation is the sole reason for that. And I don't think bringing him back into the clubhouse, it would feel like trying to force feed. It's like when you try to reinvent a really popular sitcom and you bring everybody back like 20 years later, the new Frasier. Right?
Murphy Brown.
Frasier stinks because you can't recapture something that was that good, you know, 20 years ago in a certain context with a certain chemistry of actors and all that kind of stuff. So
the Will and Grace reboot, I'll stop.
I feel like I gotta say that this stuff is hard to bring up as a topic because people assume you mean, well, bring Garrett Stubbs back and the Phillies will start winning again. I'm not even referring specifically to Stubbs. I made that a list of things because it's the overall idea of looseness the antithesis of the kind of team that
they're tight.
They seem like they want to be this
year. They know the pressure's on, Justin. That's what's going on.
And that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying the difference is Garrett Stubbs. The difference is Brandon Marsh barking at people. I'm saying the idea of being open to those things or just having a guys around who can loosen people up, you know, that does create a winning culture as well. And we've seen it create a winning culture for this team. So you know, yeah, I get that there's a reason Rafael Marchand made this team and Garrett Stubbs didn't, and I didn't really disagree with that at the time, but everyone knows what you're missing when you lose Garrett Stubbs. And then Cody Clemens getting traded, also, you know, different kind of thing, but also still their rando clutch guy that, like, was a really nice guy to have off come off the bench. But, you know, these things happen, and this is baseball. I guess I'm just noticing the switch, and it felt a little more noticeable when they weren't winning games. But they did win games this weekend, so let's talk about that.
Sure. And I'll just note it. And one other thing on this that I'll note is that those groups, with the exception of 2024, got off to the same kinds of starts as this group has. So, I mean, I don't know exactly what the difference is in the clubhouse between now and then. I think you raise a good point. I think chemistry was one of the reasons why they were so successful these last few years. And it does feel like no one's having a whole lot of fun right now. But like you said, a poor offense is a big reason can make a team look like they're having no fun, look dead in the water. And in the first game of the series, the Phillies offense certainly looked that way, losing 4-0 to the Cubs. And then they finally got some breaks on Saturday. Some bloopers fell in that opened the floodgates. They finally took advantage of a big inning, 6-run inning, where they had the bases loaded, nobody out, winning 10-4 on Saturday. Kind of a game everybody needed. And then it looked like the Phillies, that's a game that I really expected them to lose on Sunday night. With the way Nola was pitching and the offense not doing their thing, the game goes to extra innings. That felt like one of those Sunday night losses where you're like, man, they don't score in the 10th. The Cubs push one across. We all come onto this podcast really angry, really mad at the offense, but the Phillies figured out a way, scratching across a couple of runs in the 10th inning on Sunday Night Baseball, and they win 3-1. So now they come into this week 15-13, 4.5 games back of the Mets. They won two nationally televised games over the weekend, which is always kind of fun. This team does not perform very well on national TV in the regular season. They don't. They really don't. They're terrible at it. So I guess, you know, I was prepared for this to be a pretty dark episode of the podcast here, Justin.
How much? Well, we kind of made it one anyway.
Yeah,
so.
We had already kind of cast our ship in that lane. How much better do you feel having won the series in Chicago than if they'd lost? I guess, you know, how important was that win on Sunday night just for our mental state?
Well, I mean, we all know the difference between a loss and a win. We all know the difference between losing and winning 2 of 3. We all know that comes down to one loss or one win. And we all know when broken down into an individual game basis, reactions of any kind can be silly or ridiculous or hysterical. But the reason for a loss will get zeroed in on. The reason for a win gets forgotten in the celebration. You know, every win is better than a loss, but every loss is frustrating somehow. What I'm saying is it's great that the Phillies can beat a hot offensive club on the road. But these guys are still showing us who they are in 2025. They made dumb defensive mistakes. Johan Rojas had a really bad game in this series.
Yep.
Taiwan Walker didn't look great again. Bryce Harper went 2-for-12 with 4 strikeouts in this series.
I'm going to talk about
They also, as a team, hit .333 with runners in scoring position, which was, you know, a top three offensive number for runners in scoring position for the second series in a row. You know, Max Kepler looked alive at the plate. Bryson Stott continued to be effective. Jesus Luzardo obviously looked great. Aaron Nola looked great, which we're obviously going to talk about. Every decent appearance for Jordan Romano makes him harder to figure out. We said before the series started on Friday, Liz and I, that the Cubs' lousy pitching might have been exactly what the Phillies' offense, with its underlying successes of hitting hard and getting on base but not actually winning games, really needed. And, you know, that's... I don't know if you could credit it exclusively to that, but the Phillies were definitely able to hit the Cubs because their bullpen is also pretty flawed. Winning fixes everything, but all that really means is that it fixes everything today. You lose tomorrow, people will connect whatever made you lose with whatever was the problem in the win, except that got forgiven because, you know, a win's a win.
That's every how time works.
Yeah, every team's still figuring out if they're exactly who everyone thought they were, or better, or worse. The reality is there's a whole summer to fix your problems. Or the Phillies are interested in Ryan Helsley. But that doesn't change how you feel about the game in front of you. So, like, people are going to keep reacting how they are reacting, and I'm going to react how I'm going to react. But all this team showed us in Chicago was that, yes, they do remember how to beat good teams on the road. And, you know, hey, that's undeniably a good thing.
Yeah, Liz, the difference in your mind frame if they'd lost Sunday night to actually them having won. What if they'd lost that game on Sunday night?
I mean, we've talked about it being a dark podcast. No, it would have been real depressing, especially if Nola had pitched as well as he had and they hadn't been able to scratch out those runs. He didn't get the win, but he didn't get loss either.
Yeah.
And, you know, he now gets, you know, what everyone's going to see is the start of his turnaround instead of yet another thing that, you know, happened to him. And I think that the win puts off the need, like, as Justin said, it fixes things today. It puts off the need for another conversation about Aaron Nola for the 878th time. You know, it puts off the need to talk about the defense a little bit more, or
Kevin,
you
know, Long.
Yeah, or, you know, whoever's scuffling today or whatever it is, you know. Thank goodness.
Yeah. That would have been, that's my big takeaway, because even though the offense was once again, and you said it, Justin, some of the underlying things they're doing are really good. They've had some bad luck. That we saw that was the case a little bit on Sunday. Friday, they just looked dead. They looked asleep. They've been shut out way too many times already this year. And, you know, if they lose 2 out of 3 in this series, I think there's, I'm certainly coming on here, and one of the things I'm talking about is the future of Kevin Long, because at some point some buttons have to be pushed to get to snap a team out of a doldrum. But we're not talking about that here on this Monday, because they took 2 out of 3, and the offense didn't look great on Sunday, but they did enough. They scratched out enough runs. They put the ball in play in the 10th inning. They managed to get those 2 runs, and the pitching staff was outstanding on Sunday night. Specifically, Aaron Nola was 0-5 with a 6.43 ERA coming into the game, but looked more like his old self in this one. Went 7 innings, gave up just 1 run, lowered his ERA to 5.40, so he lowered his ERA by a full run in this game. Got 16 swings and misses in this game. And really, you could just tell, Liz, his stuff looked more electric. The fastball was a higher velocity. He had three balls that were 93 miles an hour. He was sitting mostly 92 in the game. So basically, it was up about a mile per hour on average, which for him is a big deal. You know, if you're sitting 90, 91, that's a whole lot different than 92, 93. And as Corey Seiden noted for NBC Sports, his career velocity before May is 91.4 miles an hour. After May 1st, it's 92.3 miles an hour. So are you confident?
Well, there you go.
Yeah. I mean, are you confident this is the Aaron Nola we're going to see? Because he looked like his old dominant self on Sunday night.
Let's try and remember this for next year when this happens for the 8th time. And we also don't remember. Right. I definitely do feel a lot better, especially seeing those numbers from Corey Seiden, you know, because it was starting to get worrying because we hadn't seen the good Aaron Nola for a while. It's not like the Phillies were letting him down solely. Mm-hmm. He was looking crappy. So it's a huge relief to see him do well and to see the Phillies come through for him, because those two things rarely happen together.
Yeah, once again, Justin, only 1 run scored for Aaron Nola in this game. In his 6 starts, they've scored 6 runs for him. So once again, he didn't get the win, didn't get his first win of the season, but did not secure his 6th loss of the year. But more importantly, you could just see watching on TV, his command was excellent. The two-seamer was really sharp, and Cubs hitters were confused as what they were getting. It was a really promising performance.
I mean, there is no feeling worse or better about Aaron Nola. If you're still charting Aaron Nola for trends, then I think you probably just got here. I mean,
you need help.
You just kind of take your Aaron Nola every 5 days and hope for the best. Assume the worst. You know, like there were some issues in that game that made it think, okay, well, eventually he's going to throw a good start. This is not going to be it. You know, it looked a little wobbly early on. His offense, you know, wasn't coming up for him. Primetime game on the national stage, and the weather in Chicago was very typical late April in Chicago weather. But Nola wasn't relying on his velocity, and they were giving him props for that on the broadcast at one point. He didn't walk anybody until the 7th inning. He used every pitch in the baseball dictionary to shut down the hottest offense in baseball. So you know he can do that. And you know before that game that he knows that he can do that. He just hasn't so far this year, and it was getting kind of lengthy. I feel like we usually get the first Aaron Nola good start, you know, than the first 3 starts. Mm-hmm. And it has obviously been past that. We're almost in May before the first, like, Aaron Nola-looking Aaron Nola start. So, you know, it was great. glad to see him show up for the first time this. Well, that's not fair. Glad to see him get a positive outcome for his efforts for the first time this year. There have been other starts where the offense has really let him down. So I wonder if he'll do it next time. But I also wonder next time if which bats are going to show up for him, too.
Yeah, I would say this is the first start of the year where he dominated. He really looked dominant.
Yeah.
In this outing. And that's what was really good to see, because obviously the questions, and it's going to be the question for him with each passing year as he gets older and the innings pile up, is it the beginning of the end? You know, it's going to be, because at some point it will be. At some point the velocity is not going to come back and the command's not going to return. But I did hear an interesting comparison, and that is he will at some point probably need to kind of, you know, morph into a different kind of pitcher, kind of the way Zach Greinke did at the end of his career. When Greinke lost his elite stuff, he had to kind of figure it out, and he became kind of like a 5-6 inning pitcher. Didn't want him to get through a lineup a third time most of the time, but for 5 or 6 innings, he was a smart enough pitcher and had good enough secondary stuff and command that he could be a capable pitcher. He could be a guy you would start in a playoff game, and that's kind of maybe where Aaron Nola's future is at some point. And it was fair to ask, you know, are we at that point now, year two into the 7-year contract that he signed? That's what made me feel good on Sunday night, was I the velocity is there, you know, like he hasn't lost it. It's there. Will we see it as often this year? Maybe not. Will we see
it? The margins are thin.
What's that?
The margins are very thin.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing for him. They are very thin. You're right. You're 100% right about that. So he's got to be, and his command has to be on. And it was on Sunday night. So that was a really good development. He didn't get the win, but the Phillies did. First start of the season that he's pitched, and they won. So that's good news for the Phils. One of the other positive things from Sunday night, Jordan Romano. He couldn't do this in New York. He couldn't get the 3 outs to secure an extra inning win against the Mets when the Phillies only scratched out 1 run in the top of the 10th inning there in a 3-2 loss. But on Sunday night, the Phillies did get that insurance run. And then Jordan Romano comes in the 10th inning and gets a 1-2-3 inning, strands the runner on second to secure the victory. It's a big step forward for Romano. Against Corey Seidman noted that even if he had another 30 straight scoreless outings or innings, his ERA would not be under 3. That's how many runs he's given up. Like, he's, in order to get his ERA under 3, he'd have to go 31 straight scoreless innings in order to get there. So we're a long ways away. So Jordan Romano's not making the All-Star team is essentially what we're telling people. The numbers are not going to look, they're not going to look good, but that was a good development too, Liz, seeing him perform well in the 9th inning a couple of days after he didn't do well in New York. I think one of the things we just have to, it's kind of like a cross your fingers and just pray that he has more nights on Sunday night like that moving forward, because they need him. They desperately need him in that bullpen. If he's not that guy, they're in real trouble.
I don't like how many cross your fingers guys that we have in the bullpen.
That was the plan.
Like it. I don't like that we don't know what some of these guys are going to do, because it would be nice to have some idea, even if it doesn't have to all be good. Like when Alvarado goes out there, we know he's going to walk a guy. He's going to look like at least twice that he has no idea where the ball is going, and he will be surprised where it ends up.
Yeah,
that is a typical Alvarado outing. I wanted what is the typical outing for these guys? It cannot be the crap we've seen thus far. It just can't be for Romano. Like, it was great to see him do well, but I was watching, and I went to, like, you know, put the bag of cookies away or whatever it was that I was eating, and I went back. I came back, and the game was over. Like, it went so quickly, and I'm like, I am not, in no way was I expecting that to happen.
I didn't know he could do that.
No, I really think it was within his skill set.
Yeah. And Justin, obviously he was like one of the, it's so hard to envision him as like one of the American League's best closers for 3 years, as recently as like 2021 to 23, but he was. So that guy's in there. We saw that guy on Sunday night, and that's kind of the guy we need.
Ride's not over with Romano. Sometimes the velo he needs isn't there and they crush him. Sometimes it is there and they still crush him. Sometimes it's there and they don't crush him. So there's nothing more horrifying to me than when Jordan Romano was like, yeah, I mean, everything's working. I pitched as, you know, everything felt right. And I pitched as well as I wanted to. And they just beat me and just crushed everything I had. Just a real bad showing. I'm paraphrasing, but that was the interview he gave following one of his more recent meltdowns. That's alarming. When the guy's like, yeah, I was operating at peak efficiency. That was my ceiling out there, and I almost blew a 7-run lead. So, yeah, that does raise some questions to the observer, I think. A late-inning relief pitcher for whom, even when everything's working, he's still getting beat. It's not a good sign. But that didn't happen this time, so obviously we're still going to see a lot more of Jordan Romano moving forward.
Yeah, because there really are no options. Unless
no options.
As you mentioned, Bob Nightingale reported something along the lines of the Phillies having some early interest in Ryan Helsley, the Cardinals closer. But again, we're too early to know what that's going to look like. And at this point, you know, to go after and trade for somebody like Ryan Helsley, it's going to require you to probably give up, you know, an Aiden Miller or Justin Crawford. You're not giving up Andrew Painter for him or something like that. I'm not trading any of those guys for a closer until I know this team's better. You know what I mean? Like, I need to see a little bit more from these guys before I'm giving up a young player with a future, with a real potential, like one of these young star guys for a closer that we may or may not need or may not be useful to us as the season rolls along. I'm confident we'll probably get into that game because I think the Phillies will get on the good foot, but we're not there yet. It's still too early for that. But at least, you know, it sounds like they're doing due diligence anyway.
The Cardinals know they have leverage too. They all, yeah. Oh, we're going to rebuild while also contending. Oh no, are we not contending? I guess we'll make some trades at the trade deadline. Well, yeah. We're not desperate to do this, but gosh, how desperate are you to trade with us, the Cardinals? So everyone knows exactly what's going on there.
Yep, yep. All right, something to keep an eye on anyway. Trey Turner, guys. I have come to the conclusion there's no Phillies player that drives me crazier more than Trey Turner.
That changes week to week, but continue.
He drives me crazy. Drives me crazy. Had a big day in the Saturday game, went 3 for 5. Oh no, pardon me, on Sunday went 3 for 5, drove in 2 of the Phillies, 3 runs. And you talk about with Trey Turner here, it's all about placement sometimes. And a lot of it is luck. You know, one of the things that we've seen with Trey Turner, he's hit some bullets right at people for outs. The two RBI singles he got were bleeding. One was a bleeding grounder through the third baseman and shortstop into left field for a base hit. Great, put the ball in play, scored a run. That's what you do. Sometimes the ball goes through the hole. That's the name of the game. And then in the 10th inning, he pushed the insurance run across with some great base running. I mean, he hit a ball, ground ball to deep third. I don't know why the Cubs were playing back so far, but he hit a ground ball to third. The third baseman kind of backed up on it a little bit, took a crow hop and threw late to first. I mean, he beat it easily to first base, really flying down the line. That's one of Trey Turner's attributes, that one of the reasons they gave him the big contract was his athleticism and his speed. And that's one of the reasons why he was safe at first and was the playmaker that he was on Sunday night. He began the day hitting only .245 with 5 extra base hits so far on the season. But that was a big run in the 10th inning. And so it was his 99th multi-hit game with the Phillies. They are 70-29. In games when Trey Turner has more than one hit. And so, Justin, that's kind of my point with Trey Turner. He just has some at-bats that he just totally gives away. Maybe more than, I'll say this, as many at-bats where he just gives away as any other player on the roster, where it's a completely non-competitive plate appearance. He has not been hitting the ball with any kind of slug. I don't want him to be a 25 home run guy, but we're not seeing him hit line drives down the right field line for extra bases. We're not seeing the gap to gap power that we saw. We're just not seeing the dynamic hitter that we saw in Washington and with LA most of the time. He's had some streaks where he gets like that, but most of the time we haven't seen it. And so far in 2025, we haven't seen it a whole lot. A good night on Sunday night, but I don't know. I don't want to kill the guy because he had a good series, I guess, but it's, you know, I don't know. Am I too harsh on Trey Turner?
Well, I mean, you can apply this to a lot of what the Phillies did in free agency and the team they've built. I mean, you can make the same argument that, yeah, Nick Castellanos has had a couple of really productive periods for this team and been at the center of some really signature, memorable plays, but ultimately has never really, with any kind of consistency, been the player that they signed. And Trey Turner falls into that same category. I mean, you know, guys, they get here after they've already proven something, and then, you know, they get their big deal. Yeah, you know, there's always players are constantly evolving and changing, and age has a lot to do with that, and time has a lot to do with that. And yeah, I mean, everybody's worried about that with these guys because they're on, him and Harper specifically, are on these very long deals that are going to keep them here for a long time. So obviously, everyone thinks about the future in regards to these two guys specifically a lot. With Harper, it's a lot less worrisome because it's Bryce Harper. With Turner, outside of that World Baseball Classic hot streak, it feels like he's never really been the guy you've described, where we're looking at lots of extra base hits into the corner and stuff. Like, that was just not really been his definitive quality thus far, but he's still been a really good and really productive player for them. His defense has been better this year. You know, it's got to be said.
Had a rough weekend in Chicago.
Had a rough weekend for sure. Yeah, tough time to be giving him a pat on the back for his defense, but it has been better this year. But again, that's might just be a product of, hey, it's the beginning of the season, who knows where that's going to lead. But yeah, I don't think you're crazy for saying that. I mean, yeah, putting the ball in play is always better than not, especially in the situations where he did it. But you don't necessarily want one of your long-term superstars hitting ground balls in that situation a lot and hoping you just get lucky, hoping you sneak it past the infield, hoping for CNI singles, hoping that you're going to be able to outrun the third baseman. I mean, there was a play earlier in that game where Johan Rojas had to outrun somebody in order for a run to get in, and he did not do it. And that really surprised me because it was like, all right, there's one thing we're doing is pressing the gas pedal, Johan. So I don't know how you didn't get to first. Trey Turner, then, when it came down to him reaching first base, I was like, well, you know, obviously this is another guy who's supposed to have speed that's a part of his game, but where are we on that right now? Because I don't know what to think about anybody. It seems like their strongest quality just disappears at a moment's notice. But then, you know, hey, he ran that out and it was not close. And that was, hey, that wound up being the insurance run that made everybody a lot more comfortable going into the last at bats of that game. So yeah, I mean, you give Turner props. Absolutely. Absolutely. And hopefully this leads to a very productive stretch in time where he's coming through at the plate. I think he's fully capable of it. But yeah, if you want to nitpick a little bit, then you could say, yeah, I don't want to see Trey Turner, the guy that he's supposed to be, hitting the ball into the ground and hoping for the best.
Yeah, I mean, Liz, 70, they are 70-29 in his 99 multi-hit games. That just kind of goes to show you how important he is, what kind of importance he has to the lineup, in that when he's going well, just how much of a driving force he can be. That's why they paid him. That's why he got the lifetime contract, essentially, you know, he's going to finish the rest of his career here in Philadelphia. They need more multi-hit games from him so that he can have that kind of impact on the offense that he had on Sunday night.
Yeah, we need to see a lot more games like we saw on Sunday night of Trey Turner, you know, taking the bull by the horns and saying, all right, we're winning this game. You know, let me get up there. I don't think that's what he was saying. I can't imagine the version of Trey Turner we've been seeing saying that type of thing. But I'd love for him to get to that point again and feel that confident, because I think some of it continues to be sort of atmospheric. Like, we can't, why has it been this way? Is Philadelphia poisonous? It's not. And so, you know, there has to be something.
Yeah. I maybe just getting older. Maybe that's what it is. But you see that he's still got all the athleticism in the world. It shouldn't be that necessarily. But and I did kind of want to circle back on, you mentioned the Bryce Harper statistics from Chicago. One of the things that's driving me crazy about Bryce Harper is he had that great week last week against the Marlins, had all those home runs, and there was all those articles in the paper. They had told Kevin Long, I was 10 days away from finding my stroke, and like on day 10 was when he started hitting all the home runs. Great. Where did that go? As far as Bryce Harper is concerned, the hot streaks are becoming less in duration. for Harper. Has anybody else kind of picked up? Maybe that's just kind of like anecdotal and not actually true in the real world. But it seems to me like the Bryce Harper hot streaks don't last very long anymore. And that
hot burps.
Yeah, they're like little they pop up and then they dive back underground. And again, he's somebody who sometimes the Phillies have not been able to develop a position player superstar for a decade and a half now, really since Utley and Howard and Rollins. So they had to go out and buy him, which is great. Bryce Harper has totally paid for the contract and everything else. It was, you know, 100%. That's what they had to do. They got the right guy. He's been amazing. He's been awesome. But they still don't have that guy. Like, they still need Bryce Harper to be that guy until somebody else can take over that mantle. And just haven't seen that really in the last, I think, even going back to last year. I know he won like a couple Players of the Month awards last year. I think that he won two of them back in like, I think it was April and May or May and June or April and June, whatever it was. He did have some big months. It just feels to, you know, since the second half last year and even for most of this year, that the Bryce Harper hot streaks have petered out pretty quickly. And then you're kind of just sitting in this like meh middle ground area.
I mean, as far as guys you want to put the ball in play, you want it to be the guy who can hit it harder than anybody. But yeah, some of these at bats in Chicago, you know, they were, it did not look like he knew what was going to happen next. And there was a lot of guessing and uncomfortableness. So yeah, I hear you. It's a tough thing to prove and a tough argument to make. Again, I feel like we're sitting here talking about a series win on the road as though the Phillies have blown it again. But there's just a weirdness to it that all these guys who, you know, have played so well, even when they are like doing all right, don't look like the best version of themselves. And, you know, I think you're right. I think you can only say at this point that it is anecdotal, but like, there were a couple of stretches last year where Bryce Harper went 0 for 4 games, but there was like one in July at the end and then one in September. And there was plenty of hitting happening between those patches of time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. I think April is just turning into like extra spring training for the Phillies. I think last year, maybe they saw, you know, what a hot start does for you. And ultimately, you know, is it more beneficial? I don't want to talk about that, so I regret bringing it up. But the point is that April's kind of this messy month, weather-wise, mm-hmm. offense-wise. People are still getting it together and looking for their groove. And like, I want to say, oh, it's going to be 10 days away from getting my stroke, says Bryce Harper. Didn't we just do a bunch of spring training for you to get your stroke? But I know that spring training is different from the pitching you're seeing in the regular season in a lot of ways too. So if you want to get into it and make that argument that like, okay, he had to get into his groove in the regular season, then fine. But ultimately, this is just kind of like a sloppy month where I don't feel like any of the main things the Phillies wanted to address going into this season feel like they're resolved in any way. And maybe those resolutions come later, but at the same time, There's some missing pieces here. There's some looseness. There's some sloppiness that you want to see corrected in some of your guys who are supposed to be pillars like Harper and Turner.
I will say one of the things that did go right this weekend also, Jesus Luzardo, 6 innings, 2 runs. None of those runs were earned thanks to a Turner error, 5 strikeouts, 3 walks, 3 hits. His ERA now down to 1.73. He is 3rd in baseball in Fangraphs wins above replacement, 1.4, behind Houston's Hunter Brown and Paul Skeens of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Also want to note, one of the things this offseason that we were looking for, trying to find out who was going to be this team's leadoff hitter, and at least against right-handers, Bryson Stott has done an incredible job in the leadoff spot. Again, severe righty-lefty splits so far this year, an 889 OPS against right-handers, only a 499 OPS against lefties. But when he's been the leadoff hitter, as the first batter of the game, Stott has a 993 OPS, hitting 455. He's gotten on base at a 539 clip when he's leading off the game. And his overall numbers when in the leadoff spot, it's an 829 OPS, 304, 365, 464, and 63 plate appearances. Those are games in which he's been in the leadoff spot. I think the Phillies are probably right to move him back down in the lineup against left-handed starters, Liz. But at least against righties, they're not going to be using Kyle Schwarber at the top of the lineup. I think Kyle Schwarber's days as a leadoff hitter are done, Liz.
I would say yes, just given Stott's overall success. Those numbers are kind of unreal.
Yeah.
Like, as the leadoff hitter, he's hitting, he's hitting almost 500. That's wild. That's wild. I'm so glad to see him do well, and that I'm glad to see the Phillies find a leadoff hitter. He was there the whole time. We just didn't know it.
And he didn't know it because of the elbow, and it seems like he's definitely recovered Justin from whatever it was that was bothering him last year. Some of these guys have not taken the step forward we were hoping he would. Bryson Stott back to looking like one of the better young second basemen. He's not a platoon second baseman. You're just not hitting him at the top of the lineup against left-handers, and you might sit him for Sosa every once in a while, but he's an everyday player, and against the righties, he has cemented himself as this team's leadoff hitter, seeing a ton of pitches, a lot of good base running from him. He's been a spark.
Yeah, I think really importantly, there's been some predictable steps forward there. But yeah, like you just kind of said, he's just looked like a really intelligent player out there.
Yeah.
Not that that was ever any doubt, but you're just kind of seeing that, I think, a little more clearly and aggressively this year. Phillies were always going to be, you know, looking for alternative leadoff hitters to try and, like, shake things up or see, you know, okay, Kyle Schwarber, maybe this isn't his role as well anymore, or maybe we want to try to equip this offense to kind of operate in a different way or a more effective way. And to have an option like Stott around and for it to work as well as it's worked is a huge development for this team, especially given how Stott's still young and he's got the speed that Schwarber doesn't have. He's a different kind of leadoff hitter, but one that has proven to be effective. And yeah, it's just really exciting because everybody was expecting a big year from Stott this year. And this is a great opportunity for him to show that, like, yeah, not only am I back just in general, but I've taken to this new role really well.
Would it be safe to say, you guys, that he is their most intelligent hitter on the team?
I think so. He comes up, and everyone was what defined him early was his ability to hit with two strikes,
right?
And his comfort level with two strikes, which, you know, when you consider the dings that some of the other young hitters on this team have received for their performances. You know, getting a little too emotional, getting a little too in their heads, you know, stringing too many poor performances together and then being unable to shake it. And Stott has, you know, obviously had a rough year last year, but, like, his overall mental makeup when he gets into the box just seems to be a little further along than some of the other guys. And that goes beyond just, like, younger players. That goes into, you know, the veterans as well.
He never let anything get to him last year. I was really impressed by that. You know, he was not doing well, and people were saying a lot of negative things. They're hearing a lot for the first time since he became, like, a full-time major leaguer. And he dealt with it all really well and came back and is just doing great again. Like, you can't ruffle. You cannot ruffle him. Yeah. He's unruffleable.
It doesn't take a lot for people to totally, at least verbally, give up on you. You have a bad game, people are bummed out. You have two bad games, people are like, when's he getting it together? Third bad game, that's when you get into, like, I think
he's
the Phillies
been awful
have to
forever.
It's time for them to move on from Bryson Stott. like it's just time. Someone this year say that JT Realmuto hasn't had a hard hit ball since he was on the Marlins.
And that's, come on.
This is what we're talking about.
Of all the players who have been getting robbed this year, JT Realmuto is it. And I'm not the biggest. I mean, Realmuto frustrates me as much, if not more, than anybody else, too. But he has legitimately hit a ton of rockets this year that have just found gloves. I mean, he's not a guy I'm going to pillory.
Was the internet right a mistake is my question. Was the internet a mistake? I think it might have been.
No doubt it was. I mean, we're bringing this podcast to people on the internet, so that he even acknowledging that, of course the internet was a mistake.
Just the sports discourse alone would tell you that.
That's right. Not just the sports discourse alone. A couple other things, of course, the Saturday offensive explosion, 6 runs with the bases loaded and nobody out. I didn't know that was possible. I didn't know that was possible, but good job against Ben Brown, former Phillies prospect, who they traded away in the David Robertson deal in 2022. Pretty clear to me, Phil's won the trade. No, Ben Brown didn't look great in that game, but he definitely has a bright future there in Chicago. A lot of hand-wringing when that deal was made, and you know he still looks like he could be a part of that rotation long-term in the future, but the Phillies got to him on Saturday. Eh.
The announcers loved him.
Yeah.
The announcers were all up in his business, and it was painful to listen to. It was not a great duo, and they just thought the world of and just continued to make excuses for him even when he started to cough up run after run.
That was for whatever reason what they had a lot of notes on, and then yeah. They just wind up in a situation where they're like, well, we got to talk about this guy because we were really kind of assuming we were going to get a former prospect beats up old team narrative, and whoops. But
I now, what made them think that would happen, really.
Yeah,
like, I don't know why they would have notes on only that. Like, that's just very poor preparation.
Right. But I'm sure you're right. You're both right, but yeah. That's exactly what happened. And so they kept driving that narrative, even as he's giving up six runs and walking the bases loaded and everything. A couple other tidbits. Brandon Marsh suffered a setback in his recovery from a hamstring injury this weekend. He had to leave Sunday's game in Lehigh Valley with a cramp in that hamstring. So it's unclear
We're just going to skip right over it, huh?
What's that?
We're just going to skip right over Max Kepler's big day.
Let's talk about Max Kepler. Max Kepler had his one big day of the season so far. He went 3-for-5. Mm-hmm. He hit a home run when the Phillies were up like 10-0. So good for him. Really hit it at an opportune time. Batting .258 on the season now.
He did hit it very hard.
He hit it very hard. Good for him. .746 OPS so far this year as a platoon left fielder. Let's not make a mistake about this. We were lied to this offseason.
100%.
They're paying him a lot of money to play part-time.
Yeah.
There's no doubt he's sharing left field with Weston Wilson. Let's not even kid ourselves about this. I mean, will I take a .258 average with a .746 OPS as a platoon outfielder? I guess, but I mean, there's been like no power there. I mean,
it's not great, guys.
No, it's not. It's a bad.
Yeah, it's at least a bad start to a deal that was supposed to be kind of a big deal. But you're right, John. Everyday left fielder. That was about as truthful as the White House press release. That was not something that I think we need to really take super seriously. Just look at what's happening. I mean, come on.
If only someone could have seen that coming this offseason.
If only.
If only.
We all just believed them.
I know.
No question.
We're just little birds in our nest waiting to be regurgitated into with Phillies information by
little
the front
idiots.
Office. Yeah.
Little dumb idiots.
Yeah. Brandon Marsh, as I mentioned, suffered a setback in his recovery from his hamstring injury. He had to leave Sunday's game with a cramp. We don't know exactly what that's going to mean for his timeline yet, but it's not great. It doesn't sound like, so we'll see. I will note that Johan Rojas who's been the everyday center fielder in his place. Defensive whiz, Johan Rojas, by the way.
Thumbs down.
You got to make that play, man.
Downstairs.
Kind of no critiques available. Just sort of like, hey, do it.
He didn't make that one play. He also let that ball drop in front of him and Edmundo Sosa. Was that in Atlanta? I think that was in Atlanta right before an Austin Riley 3-run home run.
That drove watched me it. Crazy.
From the sky to
right in front of him, he watched it.
It was literally 2 feet in front. I still can't get over that.
He could have just reached right out.
Couple of times this year too, some throws that made absolutely no sense whatsoever. I tweeted this out. I think he was worth in the half a season he played in 2023 was worth like 14 defensive runs saved. Was like legitimately great out there.
But how about that bunting though?
What are we doing with Johan?
We were lied to here too. Were we fooled?
I'm enough. Get him off the roster. I mean, there's no other option right now.
He's going to be around for a while. They love him. He's the new Roman Quinn, only he's going to play more often.
I don't think they love him. I think they have no choice.
We'll find out.
I think we will, but I mean, I don't know when, because even when Brandon Marsh comes back, you got to hit over 100 in order to stay on the field, so we'll see.
Do you?
By the way, Brandon Marsh during his rehab assignment, I think is still hitting under 200 down in Lehigh Valley.
Nuts.
They're saying like, The timing looks a lot better on his swing down there. We're feeling much better about where he's at swinging the bat.
No, you're not.
Nah, I was wondering why lying. I wasn't seeing any actual statistics.
What
yeah,
are you doing?
That's a bummer.
Ranger Suarez threw 78 pitches Sunday afternoon for the Iron Pigs. His fourth rehab start, struck out 8 over 4 2/3 innings. He's going to have one more rehab assignment, and then we'll be back on the big league roster.
Yay.
And some good news with Christopher Sanchez. He threw a bullpen session on Sunday at Wrigley Field. It sounds like he will not be placed on the 15-day injured list, according to Todd Zielecki. The Phillies are expected to announce his next step early this week, but sounds like they dodged a bullet with Christopher Sanchez and the forearm soreness that he was experiencing after that start against the Mets last week.
We'll certainly find out.
Yes.
Is all I'll say about that.
Yes.
Everyone keep your fingers crossed.
Indeed. And then the other thing, right-hander Andrew Painter has struck out 10 and walked 1 in 7 1/3 innings in 3 starts at Single A Clearwater. 2.45 ERA. They're only letting him go 3 innings per start right now. The man only has so many bullets this season. I'm starting to wonder, you know, like, he's not going to be in the bullpen, but how many of those bullets do you want to waste down in the minors? Like, if he's showing that he can get, that he's going to get guys out, I don't know how many of these innings you want to waste down in the minor leagues, but I don't know that there's a spot for him at the big league rotation just right now either, unless they go 6 man. So.
Oh, really?
he started a little slow, down there at Single A. So I think they're just giving him,
being
very careful, but they're giving him the time they think is appropriate.
Fine.
If they only want him to go a handful of innings at a time, like,
right,
there is no sense in having him waste those in the minors. Have him do them up in the majors where he can replace one of the guys in the bullpen who threw up runs yesterday or the day before.
Well, he would be doing it as a starter because he can't, and, you know, he can't ramp up quickly. He needs an hour to get started like most starting pitchers do, coming off of Tommy John. So if you used him as like kind of like a pseudo opener, but not really an opener because he is a starter. But, you know, you have him as a 3-inning guy and then you piggyback him with Ranger or something, even if you, or Christopher Sanchez, if you want to ease them in. But I don't think we're there yet with Andrew Painter. Justin, I think you're right. They're going to get him starts at Lehigh Valley too before he comes to the majors. So I think we're probably still a month away at least. But I don't think they want to waste a lot of innings down in the minors with him. They want to get him up at the big league level. So we'll see. And by then, you know, there might be another guy who needs to sit. Christopher Sanchez may not do as well. Ranger has to go back on the IL. Something weird happens. We'll see. All right. We're going to finish up the roundtable podcast, at least as often as I can remember to do it, with a little bit of a nonsense segment. You know, just kind of something. We'll throw something a little bit different into the mix there so we can talk about it. So it's not all just, you know, how much does Max Kepler stink and, you know, why can't Matt Strom, you know, cut his hair? You know, whatever. I don't know.
Oh, we got a problem with Strom's hair.
Strom's out here catching strays. What are we doing?
I know. I don't know why I said. I was trying.
They won the series, guys. They won.
I know.
Chicago.
We're gonna get
15
emails.
And 13.
I know for a fact. I'm gonna get emails on the hittenseason@billypen.com email address because I get people all the time. You're too negative. You're too negative about this team, and you're not
did
wrong.
Did everyone not
actually write
you're not wrong.
That?
Do you not hear the Friday episode? We did the entire episode on underlying successes.
They're yelling
after
at me.
A sweep
they're
by the Mets.
They're yelling at me. It's not
people
you.
People are actually writing in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we get emails. I should forward them to you. I don't read them.
He does forward them to us. They're a huge bummer. Thanks for doing that every time.
You're right. I do. But let's get into a little nonsense time here at the end of the podcast. And Eugenio Suarez hit 4 home runs in a game for the Diamondbacks over the weekend. This is maybe my favorite thing in professional baseball, when somebody hits 4 home runs in a game. Before we get into the numbers, how many Phillies guys have hit 4 home runs in a game, and can you name them?
It's more than you'd think, I think.
I think so. I mean, I know 3 who have done it.
I will
off
say
the top this. Of my head, but
there have been 19 4 home run games in all of baseball history. The Phillies have 3 of them.
Oh, all right. One of
oh,
them
I just gave you the answer.
Be.
How many Phillies have done it? Didn't I?
One
I just gave
is
you the answer.
One has got to be.
Well, tell me who it was. Tell me who it was.
One's got to be Schmidt.
One is Mike Schmidt. Correct.
Is one of them Chase Utley?
Incorrect.
Incorrect. I don't know why I thought he had 4 homers in a game.
I have 2 guesses. I think that This is coming to me from something I wrote a couple of years ago. Ed Delahunty.
That is correct. In the 1890s, Ed Delahunty hit 4 home runs in a game.
And that means Chuck Klein is one of them, too.
That is correct. In the 1930s, Chuck Klein. Nice job. You'd figure the historian does the dirty inning would know those old school guys. That is correct. Yeah. I meant to have you guys guess, and I just blurted out 3. But anyway, 19 4 home run games in baseball history. Now, this is the rarest feat in Major League Baseball. It's pretty close to perfect games, but there have been 24 perfect games in baseball history. And then it's not even close when it comes to no-hitters. 326 no-hitters in baseball history, 349 cycles in baseball history. So the 4 home run game is the rarest game you can get in terms of those 4 unique things. So true or false, guys, a 4 home run game is a greater accomplishment than a perfect game. Liz.
Can you compare accomplishments between hitters hitting and pitching?
I'm trying to.
We are.
Well, because what I'm saying is I think that it's, I don't know if, because the 4 home run game is the baseball version, is the hitter's version of the perfect game. I don't know. I think it's as important as, I don't know if it's, you know, more important or better than. Since it's rare, it might be. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it's got to still be a perfect game. That's one guy going out there every inning as opposed to a hitter who's just kind of rotating through the lineup and, you know, just getting the ball in the air. I mean, neither thing is easy, but I think a perfect game is still a more impressive personal achievement. But I think, John, this is why we continue to land on Rick Wise as the best single game performance ever.
The greatest home runs game performance
and a no-hitter. I mean, yeah. He did both. Hands
down. Hands down. The best baseball game anyone's ever played is that Rick Wise game, no doubt about it. I think that hitting the 4 home runs is the greater accomplishment because as a hitter, you are not in control of what's happening. You are having everything. I think there is no harder feat in professional sports than hitting a baseball. It is the hardest skill in Major League Baseball and in all of professional sports, bar none. To be able, and not only that, you are getting dictated to by the pitcher. The pitcher is coming at you and you have to react. So to be able to do that, whereas if you're a starting pitcher, you are kind of in control of the game. If you are hitting your spots, you should conceivably throw at least a no hitter, if not a perfect game. Like if you're and it's not easy to do, obviously, because otherwise more people would have done it by now. But you're at least, you're kind of in more control as a pitcher than you are as a hitter, in my opinion. So that's why I also think too, you know, like, certainly throwing a perfect game gives you a greater chance of winning because if you don't allow anyone to reach base and score, you're going to win those games. Whereas there have been many 4 home run games like Suarez's, his team lost that 4 home run game. So I see both sides, but I think the greater individual accomplishment is the 4 home run game. Now, which would I rather see in person? I think I'd rather see a perfect game in person just because of the lore around a perfect game. There's more of a lore. And it feels more historic when you see a perfect game than when you see somebody hit 4 home runs in a game. Even if it's like Philip Humber throwing a perfect game and you consider like the equivalent is like the Scooter Gennett 4 home run game. Like you do see randos pull these things off. But like if you, it's easier to remember who's thrown perfect games than who's hit 4 home runs in a game.
Yeah.
Fair. I almost feel like I could see the opposite. It was fun watching Jason Giambi hit 4. Did he hit 4 against the Phillies? Or did he hit 3 and then came up for 4th? Okay.
Yeah.
So the at-bat when he came up to potentially hit a 4th was played up pretty highly. I mean, you know, unfortunately, I think a lot of the examples from that period were people hitting 4 home runs potentially against the Phillies. But I don't know. I mean, there's a enjoyment from that as well. Like that night, Ryan Braun kept teeing off on the Phillies. You know, that's also fun. I have to imagine this as though a Phillies player is doing that. And that would also be a lot of fun to see in person. So I don't know. I mean, both are good. I think either side has an argument here.
I think a perfect game kind of, or, you know, even a no hitter, like it's a full game activity, you know, you're on one inning, you're off one inning, but like you've you're sort of, your body is fully engaged in the whole thing. It's a little different because it's a lot more unpredictable when that guy's going to come up again, depending on what happens. So, you know, it's, I feel like the experience of watching it would be kind of like more exciting as a perfect, yeah, you know, to watch a perfect game than at four home runs. But I have to imagine, like, actually seeing four home runs by the same guy in four different at bats in one game, like, I would lose my mind.
Yeah, it would be, like, I'm trying to imagine, what would it be like watching Zach Wheeler throw a perfect game or Bryce Harper hit four home runs in a game? And I think the reason why the perfect game is a better thing to watch is because it's building. Like, each inning, mm-hmm, each out, each time, you know, it just, it increases in drama each and every time, and you can see it, you can count it down, you know, like, it's just a steady progression, like a heartbeat, until, you know, you get to the end and it happens and everybody celebrates. Whereas the home runs, the four home runs up until that fourth at bat, you know, you're not maybe even realizing what you're watching at that point. You're like, oh my gosh. So it's more of kind of a surprise, but not necessarily like this, just the crackling energy of watching a pitcher go through a perfect game and try to pull that off. So, yeah. Anyway, congratulations, I guess, to Eugenio Suarez for performance. I don't really care, but, you know, good for him. I like baseball, so it's always cool. I love it when those games happen. So, very good. Mm-hmm. All right, up next, the Phillies begin a 6-game homestand this week with 3 against the Nationals and then 3 against the Diamondbacks this weekend. The Nationals are 13-16. They fell behind 15-0 to the Mets here on Monday before mounting a furious rally, losing 19-5 in that one. The Nats are... It was a tough watch at Nats Park on Monday, but the Nats are 13-16. And then Arizona right now is 15-13 on the season. So they have the same record as the Phillies, kind of in the same boat as the Phils at the moment, but playing in a much tougher division out there in the West. So should be a week at least here against the Nationals to start off the week to get a little bit healthy, get a little bit well, maybe even especially offensively against a Nats pitching staff that just almost gave up a 20-burger against the Mets here on Monday. So let's get to some final thoughts. Justin, any final thoughts from you before we wrap up?
Well, thinking of guys who hit four home runs in a game, that list was obviously circulating after Suarez did it. And one of the names jumped out to me, Pat Seary, which I was like, why is that familiar? And that was somebody who I had written a feature about because he hit four home runs in a game and then like had a horrible performance like 2 days later, like a record breaking number of strikeouts or something in the game. And I remember writing about that, and I'm just going to read a segment of that just to give some perspective on how some four home run games go. So this guy, Seary, he was beloved by the fans. They called him the People's Choice. One publication called him that after he made a pair of slick catches. And it was better than what some of the other outlets had called him, which was 5x5 and Fat Pat because of his girth.
My God,
man.
They said that was the reason fans loved him, was because he was a big guy. The John Kruk method, if you will. Anything he did after that was a bonus. So Charlie Zeiler was this guy manufacturing batteries, this noble profession in Chicago, I believe, at the time. And he had bought ad space in... Scheib Park, and he issued a $300 reward for any player who'd club 3 home runs in one game. But nobody had thought about 4. That was just off the table.
Yeah.
So Seary comes up ready to hit 4 home runs, and this guy calls the stadium and says, hey man, look, you already won $300. If you hit a 4th one, I'll give you $500. He comes up, by the way, he didn't hit his first home run of this 4-homer day until the 4th inning of this game. So the offense was really clicking that day. Mm-hmm. Comes up in the 11th inning of a tie game, and with 2 outs, he makes $500 by hitting this this home run out to right. So like, yeah, it was just, I don't know, that now like where that some of the sand, like a sandlot he used to play on, there was a park that had this big mural in Philadelphia that just said "Dream Big" and was called the Zeiler Playground after the businessman who had given him the money in the first place. So yeah, just just a cool one of the lesser known guys on that list of four home run hitters in a single game that, it was just interesting. Made me realize, like, oh, that's right. This feels like something I would have written about. And then
yeah,
it was
up your alley. Yeah. and some great names on that list for sure. By the way,
go Fat Pat.
Go Fat Pat. By the way, Mike Schmidt in that 76 four home run game didn't hit his first home run until the fifth. Yeah. It went to extras. We're like the fifth, seventh, ninth, and tenth or something like that. I forget what it was, but yeah, it was crazy. Liz, final thoughts?
Well, if you'd like to learn more about that guy that Justin just talked about, or Rick Wise, or many other players, go to sabre.org/bioproject for an endless number of extremely well-researched, well-written, comprehensive biographies on every player you can imagine. Some of the newest ones we've gotten in recently, Scott Pesednik. You want to learn everything about A.G. Pierzynski? We can help you with that. Bob Cobb? I don't know who that is, but we've got a bio on him. So come down to sabre.org/bioproject and learn more about your favorite baseball player today.
I know him as Robert Cobb more than Bob Cobb, but that's just me.
How about Russ Van Atta?
Attaboy. Yeah, that's all I got. Well, definitely do that and make sure to check out. Where do you go for that again? Sabre what?
Sabre.org/bioproject.
Sabre.org/Frenchie
Uholt. Who is that?
It's good enough just for the names. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. And I want to remind you guys to continue to check out our Hittin' Season Patreon. That's where you can find The Dirty Inning and Absolutely Hammered, Justin's podcast that he does with our other fun friends. It's at patreon.com/hittin'season. Check out sabre.org, as Liz just mentioned. Check out Baseball Prospectus. You can find my stuff at The Good Fight as well. And tell your friends and family about our Hittin' Season podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcast. This World Series winning team. Get in on the ground floor now. Also, tell them about our Hittin' Season YouTube page. Our roundtable podcasts will always be posted in full on our YouTube page. Just go to YouTube and type in Hittin' Season, and you'll get the full roundtable show every week. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.